presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to TSN Hockey Insider Dave Poulin. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Doing well, gentlemen. Can you imagine if we had to rely on the weatherman to do the draft prognostication? Like seriously, like if he was up there and he was saying, well, you know, they might take so-and-so, but it might rain, but it might be cloudy. And like every single day, it's a 50% chance of rain. So that's what's going to happen here. I shudder to think if the weatherman was in charge of the draft, it wouldn't be good because Simmer's got a week off. And he's looking at the weather report and thinking he's got some tough days ahead of him. Could be sunny every day.
Yeah, there you go.
Wake up and see what it is.
There you go. sounds like the reviews of the Sens draft as well, which we'll get to with you in a couple of minutes. But I want to start. Well, I'll ask you where you want to start. What did you think was the headline story from the NHL this weekend? And there were a lot of massive trades. There was also Montreal making a very controversial first round draft pick. If I were to ask Dave Poulin, what was the biggest or most important story from the weekend, what would you say?
Let's start in Montreal, JR, and with a move that shocked everyone. And, you know, when we brought it up last week, we brought it up in the sense that the young man had removed himself in the draft, which technically he's not able to do. There's no such thing. But he had reached out via Twitter, and because of his actions, you know, he was on loan as a 17-year-old to a Division III team in Sweden. And he had been charged and, you know, and then paid a fine for, you know, taking a picture and showing it to his teammates. And so we were thinking that we were ending a story last week. You know, we thought that we were just kind of putting a cap on the end of a story and that the young man, the teams would understand his wishes. And he said how much pride he would take in being drafted by an NHL team at the right time. And he didn't feel that he was in a place in his own, you know, life where he was worthy of it or would accept it. And it's just a shocking pick to me to go against the young man's wishes, number one, and, you know, and to bring that into play right now for Mark Bergevin. So much positive, you know, to end the season in Montreal, particularly in the last, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, and so much, you know, moving forward. And you know, I think that from a standpoint of taking the player, you're putting hockey ahead of some things that it shouldn't be put ahead of at that point. And so it really, really surprised me. And, you know, even in their explanation, it surprised me. When you have to have a written statement to describe why you chose your first player in the draft, you know, you should be thinking longer and harder. And, you know, and it'll come out about exactly who said, here's our guy, because it wasn't Marc Bergevin who said it. He made the ultimate decision, but this is on the scouting staff. This is on the regional scout who, you know, pushed for it, or the head of scouting, Trevor Timmons, who said, okay, this is the direction we're taking it in. And ultimately, Mark Bergevin said, okay, let's do it. But I think it really, really caught a lot of people off guard and really surprised a lot of people, and not in a positive manner.
Well, Pooley, I can tell you, Pooley, on our broadcast, JR and I were on the air right when that happened. And I got to be honest, I wasn't really paying attention. I was looking up something else. And then I looked up and JR is pointing to me, not at me, but pointing to the TV screen. And I originally thought, oh, they're doing a feature on the kid, you know, and they got some downtime. Then I realized, no, he's been picked. And JR and I looked at each other and we were both gobsmacked. And I think probably we were just like everybody else going, what? Are you serious? But for me, my question now is, you know, the pick is the pick. And no one in hockey doesn't know this story. So rehashing it is, you know, we got to talk about it, but that stuff is now past. My question for you, Pooley, is, and I'm not a PR guy, a marketing person, you aren't either, but you've been around this game a long time. Does the fire for Bergevin get bigger or smaller as time goes by? And I ask you that because now in social media, people are connecting this pick to the, you know, the attempt to sign Voyanov, to what did Bergevin know, or what was he might be a part of, or his connection in Chicago during the what is now the legal case in Chicago. I'm thinking that they hoped this would die down as time went on and just be a hockey pick. But I'm wondering now, with the other stuff being now joined to it, I think this is going to get hotter, not cooler. I don't think time is going to cool this down. I think this is going to put a bigger spotlight on everything that Bergevin has done in the last little while, not just about this player, but his perspective on kryptonite type players, which he doesn't seem to have a problem with in some ways.
I would agree with you, Dean, and it's going to put the spotlight on him and the young man and everything he does. I mean, picture his first day in the rookie camp, picture his first day in camp, and it's going to be continuous. It is. And, you know, and particularly because of the way they have built this team and how much they've talked, if you go back to the Shea Weber trade and how much they talked about character and the impeccable character of Shea Weber. And what Bergevin talked about at that point was the ability to put a player like that in a locker room and the effect it has on every other single person in the room, and how if you could put a player in that locker room for 4, 5, 6 years, that it may affect the organization for 10, 12, 20 years. Because, you know, now Shea Weber has rubbed off on Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki. So, you know, remove Shea Weber from the equation, and how long do those guys play? And then the young guys they play with, how long do they play? And what compound effect does good character have? And he's talked about that so much, and the way he's built this team with, you know, a Ben Chiarot, with Joel Edmondson, with those kinds of guys that are just really strong character people. And then this seems to refute that. It doesn't make sense. And I agree with you. It's going to be under the magnifying glass, and everything he does now, this will be a topic of conversation somewhere along the line. You know, well, how does
well,
that
I can't imagine you
this?
Would be able to answer this, but that's not going to stop me from asking it. Unless you know Bergevin personally and gave him a call, you probably wouldn't know, but I'll ask you anyway. You know, the Montreal Canadiens, like every NHL team, like any big corporation, they have a media relations and a public relations department. Do you think there's a chance that the hockey ops of the general manager contacted them and said, how do you think this will spin? I think I know how they would answer, but I'm wondering if he even thought for a second about asking outside the hockey department how this is going to spin in the real world.
I don't think that happened. I'm guessing, but it was 12:30 in the morning or 1 o'clock in the morning when that draft pick was made at the end of the draft. I don't think it happened. It could have very well happened. It could have been something that they had thought about throughout. It could have been, you know, and maybe you and I are wrong. I don't know Bergevin personally. I didn't play with him, and, you know, and he played. So many people in my generation have touched Mark Bergevin, and everybody speaks glowingly of him as a teammate. And I don't know him personally. And I haven't had the opportunity to over the last couple of years because we've all been removed from the locker rooms and the press boxes over the last couple of years. And so I don't know the answer to that. I would be surprised if it was plotted and planned out, or if it just came to the fact, because you wouldn't know who else was available at that time, Dean. Yeah. You wouldn't know, you know, what other players on your board. It's hard to believe with the disparity in the players taken and where they were on various draft boards that there wasn't somebody on the board that they had rated higher than this player.
Dave, I talked to some different people who are involved in hockey, not necessarily NHL, you know, about this yesterday, right? Because it's got everybody talking. And some people came back with, well, listen, everybody makes mistakes, especially when you're a teenager. You know, life is about second chances as well. So I'll be the devil's advocate here. Why should it be different with this player?
I think because the player himself opted out. I think that changes the complexity of it. And, you know, and I do, you know, I understand second chances. This all just came to light, literally. When did we hear that, JR? Was that Wednesday,
yep.
I believe? Or,
yep.
You know, so it just all came to light. And I think the player's opting out because of his understanding of, you know, what he had done and the severity of it and the complexity of it changes that formula.
All right, let's talk about some of the big trades, I think, on the weekend. You know, Seth Jones, Sam Reinhart, the Ekman-Larsson Garland deal to Vancouver. I'm missing one off the top of my head. I don't have my notes in front of me, but which one of those do you think, and the Seth Jones one, and the contract is what do you think is Chicago is thinking, and what do you think of the deal? Let's start with that one.
I really like what Chicago did with Seth Jones. They, you know, they traded Duncan Keith, their cornerstone defenseman, and are really turning the page on that last generation with Seabrook and Keith gone now. And yes, Jonathan Toews hopefully will be back, and Patrick Kane is there. But this is a step forward to me for Chicago, and, you know, and it's a significant step. I mean, I think he's the foundation 26-year-old defenseman, and I think he's the foundation for the next transition away from Keane and away from Taves. Vancouver's a better hockey team, guys. They just are. You added Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and Connor Garland is a really good player, and he's a player a lot of people don't know about, but I think he strengthens that top six. And don't forget, they're going to put Elias Pettersson back in that mix as well, because he missed most of last year. And they cleaned out a lot of short-term money. That's a short-term for long-term money situation. So they get Oliver Ekman-Larsson, who's a really good player, and the final number will be in the sevens because Arizona's absorbing 12% of his contract. But they cleared out literally $11 million in next year's cap ahead of that with the guys that they moved out of there, and Roussel and Jay Beagle and Louis Erickson. Philly, that's a big makeover, guys. That's, you know, that's five guys in and out. Cam Atkinson in, Ristolainen in, Ryan Ellis. You know, I think people are really going to appreciate Ryan Ellis, who don't know his game as well from Nashville and the defense they've always had there. You know, it's funny because I actually like what Jarmo Kekäläinen did in Columbus. And he ends up with three draft picks, and he gets three really good potential players. Kent Johnson, everybody says, is the skill. And I don't know a lot of the drafted players as well. I've seen Johnson play on tape, but I don't know a lot of them. I did see Corson Kuhlman's play, the third player. They took the defenseman in the U18s and a real steady defenseman. He's going to play for Tony Granato in Wisconsin. And then Cole Sillinger, you know, was a player I think that would have been on Ottawa's radar screen with that 10th pick and just an all-around centerman. I really like what Jarmo did. You know, he moved a player, and I think it's going to get to a point they have to win their guys, and they have to win in the playoffs for people to appreciate how good a city Columbus can be. And somehow that's been, you know, a place where people have ended up wanting to leave, and the people that play there love it. It's a great town. I've been there a number of times for different reasons, for Ohio State reasons, for Columbus Blue Jacket reasons, and it really is a great town. So, you know, he's got to keep going there, but I like what he did, and that may sound strange. Buffalo has started, but it looks like Eichel could still be on the move, and that's a big story. Florida got better with Sam Reinhart and not really giving anybody up. So there was so much movement around. Maybe the team that is going to be hurt the most is the Toronto Maple Leafs with the loss of Zach Hyman. And that looks like it's pending, and until it's done, it's never done. But it looks like he's on his way to Edmonton. They have announced that. Now it's just about compensation. Guys, that's really going to hurt this hockey club, because he was a player who wanted to stay here. He was a player who fit so well here. He was a player who made others better, and you just can't go out and replace him. So I think that, you know, they really, really have been hurt by that, and it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do in the next few days.
It is the nature of the beast, Pooley, in that this time of year around the draft, not this date, but the events going on, that there's things that overshadow other things. But I have to say that as much as people have talked about, certainly during the playoffs, but over the last year, the fact that some people think he is or will shortly be the best defenseman in the NHL, it is almost like the Cale Makar $9 million a year extension was blown by in about an hour. Like no one even talked to, you know, the Seth Jones conversation kind of took over the dominance of the defenseman conversation, and the trading of Goss Despair in Philadelphia for virtually nothing, even though he wasn't obviously at the same level as these guys. But I'm not sure I've ever seen a player, a huge extension like that, a huge commitment by the team to a long-term contract, a six-year contract at $9 million a year, get walked past so quickly because there's so many other things going on.
Are we allowed to say a quiet $9 million, Dino?
Yeah.
I realize that, no, that was a quiet $9 million, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. You know, a
22-year-old player, and I think there's a, you know, from his standpoint, he's signing into a market without a lot of money. That is going to be, you know, Seth Jones got 9.5, but that's going to be at the top of the market. There's only five defensemen today that make $9 million, and Seth Jones isn't in that category for another full year. Only five defensemen. And so it's amazing what people think of him. But in a way, you know, he's at 6 years, so that's to his benefit. You know, he comes back into the market in 6 years. It's not an eight-year extension, and they would have been pushing hard to get that up. So maybe the number drops a little bit because he's able to chop a couple of years off of that, and he'll be going back into the market at 28 years old. Just a terrific, terrific player. And, you know, it's going to be interesting because we talked about Hyman, and, you know, he got permission with his agent to go out and see what was in the market. because an agent sits and says, we can get this, we can get this, we can get this. And finally the GM says, go get it. Go see if you can get it. And, you know, and they've done it, and now it's come back, and it will cost them the player. It sounds like Carolina did it with Dougie Hamilton, whose agents would have been saying the same thing. And now he may be going back to Carolina and say, well, maybe it isn't in the market. And maybe Chicago was a player in that before the trade for Seth Jones. But, you know, in his case, you know, he may have been saying, look, I think I can get nine. And now he may be coming back to them and saying, okay, I can. Maybe I'm more in the eight range. And I don't have him in the category with those top defensemen. I don't have him in there with Roman Josi and Cale Makar now. And, you know, and Doughty and Carlson were ahead of it when the market was very different. But, you know, I think Dougie Hamilton's a really good player. I don't have him in that top category.
Dave, I won't ask you to grade Ottawa's draft because none of us have really seen many of these players. Maybe you have. I'm doubting all six. But there's a lot of draft experts, most of them so-called experts, that have panned Ottawa's draft, said they reached for pretty much every player on their draft list. If you're Trent Mann, the chief scout, if you're Pierre Dorion, the general manager, do you really care what people have to say? Or have you got enough currency now from what looks to be a pretty successful drafting record that you're like, you're more than satisfied with the work that you've done in the past?
You absolutely have enough cred, and they should just dismiss the outside talk this year more than any other year, JR. And, you know, when I think of how these lists are put together and people say, well, they reached for him. No, they didn't, because that's where he was on their list. And that's the important part. If that's where he is on your list, then, you know, I have heard GMs say, look, I want to see your list before the draft, and you're not moving off that list. Don't tell me going into the draft you have a player at number 10, and then we get to a player say, well, we decided we like this guy better. Because they spend so much time and so much intensity in those boardrooms putting these lists together. And if they had Tyler Boucher 10 or higher on their list, and that's why they took him there. And the amazing ability, guys, is to be able to merge the lists. So take the different lists and just take the different lists in North America and say you have a Quebec list, an Ontario list, a Western Canadian list, and a U.S. list. Okay? Now, the different levels of competition, you know, you could get and say, okay, well, Quebec's different from Ontario. Okay, well, now I want you to merge your Quebec and Ontario lists. And you decide if somebody playing for the 67s is somebody that's, you know, better than the guy in Rimouski. Like, you have to be able to decide that. And that's where the Tyler Boucher one and this U.S. national development team is so interesting, because you're merging those guys into a league they don't play in. And you're trying to figure out the development and the growth. And that's where the importance, and certainly with Ottawa, they've been able to merge their lists and take a Shane Pinto, for example. I think people said he was a reach when he was drafted where he was. And now they're saying, yeah, he was a reach in the wrong direction. He should have been taken way higher. So it's the importance of being able to merge your list in a really challenging year when some kids didn't even play. And then when those lists are merged, and that's the critical part, where did Boucher end up against kids in the Q, against kids in the O who didn't play, against the Western League, against the Europeans? And if they had him there, they have to take him there. And he also, I think it's a bit of a reflection. The first thing that stood out to me about, you know, at least four of their players was the size guys. 6'1", 205. Ostapchuk is 6'3", 205. Ben Rogers, 6'4", 200 pounds. And then Romeo is 6'5". So clearly size hasn't left the game. And, you know, you talk about skill level. Yes, that's a clear factor. But if I get a really skilled big guy and a really skilled little guy, I'm taking the really skilled big guy. And so size was a significant factor. And who does Boucher compare to? You know, they're throwing names out there, and you look at the way the playoffs are played, and Ottawa feels that they have some skilled players up front in their young group, and they wanted a little more sandpaper and grit, and they felt that player was available. So I don't think you sit back and say, well, you know, this doesn't compare to the other lists. And you build your list, and you have the cred, and you have the ability to do it. You do it with confidence.
Pulley, when you weigh criticism of this team or any team that drafts, it doesn't really matter, whichever one, how do you balance in your own mind strength of the draft? Because JR and I were talking about this earlier this morning, and my perspective was, you know, so much on social media that is critical of Ottawa selections. One of the ongoing threads is you know, at 10, you should be taking a higher skilled guy than that. And my point is, everybody who is an expert in this has been telling us for over a year that this is not a particularly strong draft. And next year's is, last year's clearly was, but this one isn't. It's not a deep draft. So my point would be, knowing what a player is going to be in 5 years is unknowable in the best situation. And my question would be, do you really know that there was another player with more quote unquote skill where they were picking at 10? You know, is that even knowable? And never mind be knowable enough to be upset about it.
No, it isn't at all. And, you know, when we talk about social media criticism, who is social media, right? They say, who are they? And that's the big thing. I mean, it's so easy to get on social media and hide behind, you know, a tag and criticize. But nope, you have to have confidence in your group. And Pierre Dorion has every reason to have confidence in his group of scouts and what they've done over the last handful of years.
All right, good stuff. Dave, appreciate your time and your perspective on all of this. The fun and frivolity continues this week with buyouts ending tomorrow and then, of course, free agency on Wednesday. So we got lots still to chat about for the rest of the week. Appreciate your time. Enjoy the day, and we'll look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.